Let's open to John chapter 9. John chapter 9. Let's begin reading in verse number 8. The neighbors, therefore, and they which before had seen him that was blind, said, Is not this he that sat and begged? Some said, This is he. Others said, He is like him. But he said, I am he. Therefore said they unto him, How were thine eyes opened? He answered and said, A man that is called Jesus made clay, and anointed mine eyes, and said unto me, Go to the pool of Siloam and wash. And I went and washed, and received my sight. Then said they unto him, Where is he? He said, I know not. They brought him to the Pharisees, him that aforetime was blind. And it was the Sabbath day when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. Then again the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. He said unto them, He put clay upon mine eyes, and I washed, and do see. Therefore said some of the Pharisees, This man is not of God, because he keepeth not the Sabbath day. Others said, How can a man that is a sinner do such miracles? And there was a division among them. They say unto the blind man again, What sayest thou of him, that he hath opened thine eyes? He said, He's a prophet. But the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight, until they called the parents of him that had received his sight. And they asked them, saying, Is this your son, whom you say was born blind? How, then, doth he now see? His parents answered them and said, We know that this is our son, and that he was born blind. But by what means he now seeth, we know not. Or who hath opened his eyes, we know not. He is of age. Ask him. He shall speak for himself. These words spake his parents because they feared the Jews. For the Jews had agreed already that if any man did confess that he was Christ, he should be put out of the synagogue. Therefore said his parents, He is of age. Ask him. Well, last time we got together, we covered the first part of this chapter, where Jesus now has passed out of the temple, and he's passing by this man that was born blind, and he stops. The disciples ask him, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind, which gave away a whole lot about how they thought of themselves. And Jesus' answer was, well, this situation has arisen so that the works of God can be made manifest. And again, this particular work is that a man who was born blind is given sight. Well, the Pharisees latch on to that right away because their attitudes haven't changed one iota just because Jesus came out of the temple and now he's without the temple. The Pharisees immediately follow so that they might resist, to gainsay and to resist. And so we find them now questioning this man. And as we pointed out before, the interesting thing is that Jesus made clay and anointed his eyes with clay and then sends him to the pool of Siloam to wash. Well, what's the surest way to make somebody that can see blind? Putting clay in their eyes, putting mud in their eyes. Well, do you think that there's symbolism involved there, or do you think Jesus was just perpetuating a quack cure which couldn't possibly work?
further symbolism.
Of course.
By the opposite of what a man thinks is hell.
Sure. Absolutely. And do you think that Jesus was using this man to represent the Pharisees? And do you suppose maybe they might get that? Yes, we did go down and read the end of the chapter, didn't we? So as we see this situation unfold and develop, we want to be sensitive to the fact that these Jews are aware of the fact that Jesus has done these notable miracles, which they can't refute, try as they might. So they try to gainsay them, or simply deny them. But are they willing to receive their sight? No. No. They're not. Well, as we discussed last time, this man was born blind from birth, and since we already know now that there's symbolism involved here, it's symbolism of what? That the whole human race was born blind? Yes. Well, we looked at a couple of scriptures last time, and I guess this morning we probably had look at a few more here, since that is the central teaching that Jesus is doing here. So first, let's turn to Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1. Now, Romans chapter 1, 2, and 3 are what? What is the subject matter? Yes, God's indictment of the human race. Absolutely. And what is the indictment? All have sinned and come short of the glory of God, but what about man's attitude? Man hates God, even though God has given ample evidence that he is God. Certainly. So let's begin reading in verse number 21, Romans chapter 1. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Well, who are the they here? In verse number 21, because that when they knew God, we should probably try to figure out who the they are here, if this is an indictment. Yeah, the whole human race, Jew and Gentile alike. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God. Does that imply that there was a time when men knew God? Of course it does. Neither were thankful, but became vain in their imagination, and their foolish heart was darkened. What does that mean, that word darkened here? What does that imply? Their foolish heart was darkened.
It could no longer see.
Yes, but are we speaking of physical sight here, or something else? Yeah, spiritual perception. Perception of truth. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Well, let's carry this over into John chapter 9, shall we? Do you think that the Pharisees that are standing in judgment of Jesus think that they're smart? What did they say to the blind man when the blind man asked if they wanted to be his disciples too? What was their answer? I know I didn't read that this morning, but we read it previously.
Yeah,
we're Moses' disciples, but they said something else too. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Well, let's hold your finger here, but let's go back. back to John chapter 9. Look at verse number 34. They answered and said unto him, Thou wast altogether born in sins, and dost thou teach us? What are they giving away about themselves? We're smarter than you. We know more than you do. We have degrees. We've been to all the rabbinical schools. You're just a poor blind beggar, and you're going to teach us? You're going to presume to teach us something? What are they saying? We are so much wiser than you are. Well, that takes us right back to Romans chapter 1, doesn't it? Verse number 22, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Now, this is general, and what we see in John chapter 9 is particular, but the situation certainly applies, doesn't it? How did they become fools? We've seen that the Pharisees have professed themselves to be wise. Thou wast altogether born in sins, and dost thou teach us?
Well, that's a prideful statement.
It is. But pride in what?
Their self-righteousness.
Their self-righteousness and their knowledge. Mm-hmm. Aren't they saying to this blind man, you don't even know what you're talking about? You're just some poor ignoramus that lived out in the street, blind, a beggar. You've never read a book. You've never been to school. We're the smartest people in the room. I know that doesn't happen today, but look back there. Oh, wait. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. How did they become fools? And what is a fool? People use the word all the time, don't they? Yeah, well, God uses it here too. What is a fool, especially in this context? Well, yes, but is it deeper than just somebody that doesn't believe in God? Yeah, they're intentionally ignorant. They're divorced from reality. Doesn't that back up to verse 21? Vain in their imaginations? Sure, it's the same thing. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Isn't that what's happening in John chapter 9? And the blind man has the temerity to point this out. Why, never has it been since the world began that one opened the eyes of the blind. How are you going to explain that away? Let's move on to verse 23 in Romans chapter 1. And change the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man, and to birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves. Now, this has a particular meaning in this context, of course. But could we apply some of what has been said here to the scene that we see in John chapter 9? And change the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man. There's a reason I stopped there before that comma. Is there a sense in which the Jews had done just this? And change the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man. Now, somebody might say, well, you're taking this out of context. No, I'm not taking it out of context. I'm leaving it in the context. But is there something here that comports itself to the Jews in John chapter 9? I know it speaks of idolatry here. But is all idolatry the worship of physical idols?
No, you can worship yourself. You can
make
yourself God. I mean, you can.
And could you worship another man?
Absolutely. Sure.
Now, back in John chapter 9, the Pharisees had an answer to this man when he asked, will you also be his disciples? What was their answer? Pardon?
She said it last time. She said,
we're Moses' disciples. That's exactly, isn't that what they said? So who are they implying that they worship and follow? Of course, and who was Moses a disciple of? Yeah. Funny how they fail to make that connection. And who is this blind man a disciple of? It hasn't fully come to him yet, but he is. He's in the formative stage. He's already said, do you want to be Jesus' disciple? I think he's implying that he's almost there, isn't he? Wow. Verse 23 again, Romans chapter 1, and change the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man. Yes, it speaks of idolatry, but don't men make other men idols? Of course they do. Now we know verse number 24 continues, speaking of sodomy. But verse number 25 says, who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshipped and served the creation more than the Creator. Who changed the truth of God into a lie? Is there some way that this truth, and again, in Romans chapter 1, we're speaking of idolatry, but is there some truth that we can glean from this that would apply to the Pharisees in John chapter 9? What was their big beef about Jesus opening the eyes of this blind man, their cause celebre? It isn't really that. Because he did it on the Sabbath day. Who changed the truth of God into a lie. Now, we know that elsewhere in the Scriptures, Jesus castigated these Pharisees for doing acts on the Sabbath that they would never have tolerated anyone else to do. Didn't he one time say, which of you, you Pharisees, if you have an animal that falls into a pit on the Sabbath, you wouldn't pull him out and you hold yourselves guiltless? And here I have opened the eyes of this blind man, did good for a human being on the Sabbath, and you're going to find fault with that? Hadn't that situation arisen? Yes. Indeed it had. Now the Sabbath is part of what? The idea of setting the Sabbath apart from the other 6 days of the week.
It's part of the Ten Commandments.
It's part of the law, yes. Part of the Mosaic Law. It actually long predates the Mosaic Law. But yes, it was codified into the Mosaic Law. That's true. who changed the truth of God into a lie, had they actually changed the truth of the Sabbath into something that God never intended for it to be? Had they changed so many of the other laws of Moses into something that God had never intended for it to be? Standing on the street corners, making long prayers, and then devouring widows' houses? On and on. Who changed the truth of God into a lie? There's some spiritual truth here. And worshipped and served the creation more than the Creator. What did the Pharisees really worship? They said that they worshipped God. But God is standing before them in John chapter 9, and they're certainly not worshiping Him. Pretty much. The whole religion racket was nothing more than to give them a place of wealth and prestige.
Because didn't they blow a horn? Didn't somebody blow a horn if they gave money, or if the Pharisees gave money? Wasn't a horn
the blowing of the shofar?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, there was something in the back of my mind that they did something and the horn blew.
Well, did the widow blow a horn when she cast her two mites into the treasury? Who did Jesus notice had cast into the treasury? Why were the Pharisees casting into the treasury? That they might be seen of men. Absolutely. They had quite a little racket going. And because of that, they darkened their own foolish hearts. They changed the truth of God into a lie and worshipped and served the creation more than the Creator. Sounds to me like they're really not a whole lot different than the Gentiles. The Gentiles ran their idolatry a lot more roughshod. But which carries the greater guilt? Yeah. Paul is going to go on in the book of Romans and tell us that the Jews were not just sinners as the Gentiles, but they were also transgressors because they had transgressed the law of God over and over again. Verse 26, for this cause God gave them up to vile affections. Well, this is again speaking of sodomy here. But could you spiritually apply this to the Jews as well? Did they have vile affections? They certainly did. Verse number 28, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. Now, once again, I completely understand that Romans chapter 1 here is speaking about the gross sins of the Gentiles. But the Jews, too. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, is there a way that that somehow applies to what we see in John chapter 9? They did not like to retain God in their knowledge. In John chapter 9, is there ample evidence to show that Jesus is God? I mean, aside from the fact that he's just in the temple, said it. Now he's gone out of the temple and proved it. Would that not be evidence if the Pharisees were to be objective to say this has to be God? Why didn't they? The question just asks itself, doesn't it? Because they didn't want to. They did not like to retain God in their knowledge. They didn't want to. They hated him. And then in verse number 28 again, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. Okay, this again is speaking of the depravity of mankind, Gentiles mostly. But don't forget, Paul's going to point out the fact that the Jews are in on this too. They're not guiltless here. But is there some bearing on John chapter 9? God gave them over to a reprobate mind. Somebody would say, well, these are adulterers and sodomites. Yeah, that's true. But is there some sense in which these Jews in John chapter 9 are given over to a reprobate mind? Of course. And to do something that's not convenient? Are they up to that too? Didn't we marvel when we pointed out the fact that this blind man said a man called Jesus did this? What are they planning to do to Jesus? Raise him up and put a laurel wreath upon his head and declare him Caesar? A too, Brute. The plot's coming together. Let's go back to John chapter 9 and look at a couple of things here as we're thinking about this. What does this man have to say? Well, first of all, he says, it was a man called Jesus. Don't you think that was kind of bold? Look at verse number 22. These words spake his parents because they feared the Jews. Why? For the Jews had agreed already that if any man did confess that he was Christ, he should be put out of the synagogue. Now, the parents knew this, didn't they? Do you suppose that was lost on this particular man?
No, because he needed his parents to guide him around. He couldn't
speak. Of course. Don't you suppose that he had heard that the Pharisees said anybody that confesses Jesus is going to be put out of the synagogue? Doesn't that make it all the more astounding that he tells the Pharisees point blank to their faces, a man called Jesus did this? That's pretty bold. He's done something that his parents wouldn't do. They were afraid. Is this man afraid? I think he's starting to gain his sight before he gains his physical sight. Don't you think? A man called Jesus. Do you think that this man, if he'd gone the way of the world or of his parents, would have just received his sight and gone on without saying anything to anybody? He could have done that, couldn't he? He could have said, I just went and washed in the pool of Siloam and now I see, and left out the rest.
Or he could have been like the Samaritan woman and ran and told everybody.
Isn't he telling everybody here? Remember, this is a crowd that's gathered around here to behold this spectacle. This is a notable miracle that's taken place here, and it can't be hidden because it wasn't done in a corner. It was done right out on the street where everybody could see it. And they did see it. A man called Jesus. He's the one that did this. He could have ran and hidden and avoided this controversy, couldn't he? By the way, do you suppose he ended up put out of the synagogue? If they ever let him in the first place. But yes, he's crossed the Rubicon here, hasn't he? He is boldly proclaimed right here in front of this whole assembled crowd, a man called Jesus did this. Are the Pharisees going to do their best to put him on the run? Of course they are. Look at verse number 16. Therefore said some of the Pharisees, this man is not of God because he keepeth not the Sabbath day. Well, we've already talked about that. They wouldn't have said that if they hadn't been given over to a reprobate mind, would they? Others said, how can a man that is a sinner do such miracles? And there was a division among them. Do you think that there are some other people that are thinking this over? And there are even Pharisees. Do you suppose maybe Nicodemus was thinking things over? And maybe Joseph was another one that was thinking a few things? Were they in this? We don't know. We don't know. But what we do know is that Jesus is now in Jerusalem, and that was the place that the high Sanhedrin lived and met together, did they not? Do you suppose that this miracle has escaped their ears? If not their very sight? We're not told that. But there is a division among them. Verse number 17. They say unto the blind man again. They just keep carping on this guy. They can't leave well enough alone. They've got to make their point. What's the number one rule when you find yourself in a hole? Stop digging. These people aren't very smart. Maybe not as smart as they said they were. Verse 17, they say unto the blind man again, what sayest thou of him that he hath opened thine eyes? Now, what do they think this guy is going to say? Pardon? Yes, they're trying to get him to change his mind about who Jesus is. We're going to give you one more chance here. This could be it. If you persist on going down the road you started going down, you're going to end up out of the synagogue and rejected by Jewish society. So we're going to give you one more chance. Verse 17. They say unto the blind man again, what sayest thou of him? That he hath opened thine eyes. Are they confessing something here? People will always tell you where they're coming from if you just listen to what they say. What have they actually said here? Aren't they seeding the point here that this is a notable miracle and Jesus did do it? That's kind of astounding. Do you suppose that it was with forethought that they said this?
No.
Of course not. What is a reprobate mind?
It's corrupt, isn't
it? It's corrupt and it's stupid. Here here they've completely ceded the point. They're saying, okay, so this man called Jesus really did open your eyes. So what have you got to say about him? He said, he's a what? He's a prophet. Well, that's interesting. First of all, he hasn't backed off his testimony one iota, has he? Are you sure you don't want to change your mind? Going once, going twice. What does the guy say? He's a prophet. You asked me what I thought. I'm telling you, he's a prophet. Now, why would the guy have said that? Do you suppose it's because he had heard and understood that some of the Old Testament prophets had done miracles like this? And so, therefore, since he'd done that, he must be one of them. And even the Pharisees accepted John the Baptist as a prophet, didn't they? He probably knew that too, but John did no miracle. But he knew that some of the Old Testament prophets had done miracles, but they'd never done this miracle. This is something entirely new. He's a prophet. Is that true? Yes, he is a prophet. He's a lot more than a prophet, but he is a prophet. So right away, of course, the Jews fall into line and say, well, now we see it all now. Verse number 18, but the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of him that had received his sight. Isn't this interesting? In verse number 17, they cede the point that he'd been blind and Jesus had opened his eyes, but now in verse number 18, they didn't believe concerning him that had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of him that had received his sight. Does it sound like they're maybe a little confused? This is another mark of a reprobate mind. Constant confusion and inconclusion. Well, they call up the parents, and in verse number 19, they asked him, saying, is this your son whom you say was born blind? How then doth he now see? What do you think they're really driving at here? What do you think their purpose is in calling the parents and then asking them this question? Not only is this your son who you say was born blind, so they've already said that, they've already given that testimony, but then they say, how then doth he now see? What do you suppose their purpose is, since once again they've ceded the point? The parents have already told them, yeah, this is our son, and he was born blind.
Did they want to see where the parents' allegiance
was? Of course they're trying to get the parents to deny that Jesus had performed this miracle. It must have been something else, the magic curative powers of the Pool of Siloam. Anything. What's their purpose? To discredit the miracle? And by discrediting the miracle, discredit Jesus? Of course. They're seeking corroborative witnesses here because they certainly didn't find one with the man that was born blind, did they? He's been pretty bold. Verse number 21. And you thought weasel words started with lawyers. Oh, wait. A lot of these Pharisees were lawyers. Verse 21, but by what means he now seeth, we know not. Do you suppose? Yes, indeed, they did know. Who would have been the first to know? Don't you suppose that this man that had been born blind had told his parents already? A man named Jesus made clay?
They were probably there watching him.
They probably were. This miracle is called no small stir. This is the major news of the day. I scarcely think it escaped them what had taken place. Sounds like Sergeant Schultz, doesn't it? We know nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Some of us that are old enough that remember that TV show. We know nothing. Verse 21. But by what means he now seeth, we know not. Or who hath opened his eyes? We know not. He is of age. Ask him. He'll speak for himself. Did they just throw the kid under the bus?
Yeah, but he is of age. So ask him.
Well, that's true, but is this poor guy getting any corroboration from his parents? The human race is a sad state of affairs, isn't it? Why would we want to spend time looking at this? Because these are the very kinds of things that you see going on around you every day. Let's pray.